How strong is your idea flow? Are you familiar with that term? It refers to the number of ideas you or your team can generate in a set amount of time. And keeping up a healthy idea flow is one of the best things you can do for your business, according to Jeremy Utley and Perry Claiborne. Jeremy and Perry are both professors at Stanford's famous design school and co-authors of the new book, Idea Flow, The Only Business Metric That Matters. In it, they offer practical suggestions on how you and your colleagues can keep those ideas flowing. Here's Jeremy to share five of their key insights.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Utley from the Stanford Hasso Plattner Institute of Design, also known as the D School. Alongside my co-author Perry Claiborne, we lead the D School's executive education programs for professional learners, a series of graduate student courses on innovation, leadership, and entrepreneurship, and a widely popular web series called Stanford's Masters of Creativity. We are the co-authors of Idea Flow, The Only Business Metric That Matters. The topic of innovation has reached a fever pitch in corporate America, yet for all the hype, it remains one of the most underdeveloped capabilities in business. Drawing on the last dozen years of teaching executives and graduate students at Stanford, our new book aims to dispel pervasive myths that hinder innovation and set the record straight on foundational mindsets that unleash both individual and organizational breakthroughs. We are delighted to share five insights from the book. Insight number one, innovation is not an event, it's a practice. In far too many organizations, the word innovation conjures images of a hackathon or a workshop. Few people treat it like what it actually is, a capability, a craft which can be honed through practice. No one asks to be dropped off in the ocean after their first swim lesson or books Carnegie Hall after a piano lesson. But we effectively do just that when it comes to innovation. We expect everybody to be able to sprint at a moment's notice with no training, no preparation, or even stretching. Like every other capability, flexing the innovation muscle takes discipline. Want to be a pianist? Do your scales. Want to be a swimmer? Put in your laps. Want to innovate? Master Idea Flow, the proven technique for generating a volume of solutions to a problem and discovering which is best via rapid, scrappy experimentation. For all the hype innovation gets, the secrets of breaking through remain shrouded in mystery. Methods beat muses, and methods can be learned. We've seen firsthand how liberating and invigorating it is to hone the creative craft, and we help entrepreneurs and executives discover and amplify innovation capacity as instructors and advisors today. The book distills lessons from the last dozen years of leading innovation capacity building initiatives in retail, hospitality, technology, healthcare, and many other fields all over North America, Europe, and Asia. Insight number two. Forget zero to one. The mantra of zero to one is near gospel in Silicon Valley. But here's the problem. It's just not correct. Never mind the fact that the human brain is incapable of creating from nothing, as ideas are really just connections between two or more things we already know. The truth is, the right ratio is exactly opposite zero to one. Research conducted by Stanford professor Bob Sutton found that on average it takes 2,000 ideas to get to one commercial success. Our own experience, corroborated by stories from innovators as varied as Dyson vacuums, Saturday Night Live, pharmaceutical discovery, and the Taco Bell Food Lab, confirms Linus Pauling's adage. The best way to have a good idea is to have a lot of ideas. That's not to say that we need to have a lot of good ideas. Steve Jobs is often hailed as the quintessential innovator, yet when he met daily with Sir Johnny Ive, he'd regularly say, "Hey Johnny, want to hear a dopey idea?" In his memorial address, Sir Ive tells how, most of the time, they really were dopey. Sometimes they were truly terrible. But as Ive says, every once in a while, they take the air out of the room and they leave us both breathless. Now, nobody thinks of Steve Jobs and thinks, what a dope. No, we think of disruption, redefining categories, and customer delight. Yet, Jobs understood what few do. To get to delightful ideas, you've got to be willing to not only have, but also share dopey ones, too. Insight number 3, look for what's wrong, then stop it. One of the oldest assignments at Stanford is to keep a bug list. This was assigned decades before computer programming co-opted the verbiage. It simply meant to impart the discipline of attending to annoyances and writing down the things that bug you. It turns out little irritations are the seeds of innovation. But here's the thing. We keep looking for what's wrong long after when being critical won't help us achieve our objective. Prime example, when a team is looking to generate possibilities. Everybody's been in a brainstorm with negative Nathan. That's why so many of us dread them. Put rough ideas in front of that guy? No way. Innovation is certainly about looking for what's wrong and cultivating a sensitivity to problems to be solved, but it's also about being able to shut that instinct off from time to time. In idea generation mode, the smartest person on the team isn't the person who can find the logical flaws, but rather the person who can see the most possibilities. Successful idea generation is about looking for what's right, too. We call this being sparkable at the D School, having an instinct and an openness to allow someone else's ideas to spark something inside of you. Instead of asking, what do I think of this idea? When you're generating, a better question to ask is, what does this idea make me think of? That's the useful question. Insight number 4, ignore the experts, listen to novices. There's nothing new to be discovered in physics now, the revered Lord Kelvin reportedly told the British Association for the Advancement of Science in 1900. All that remains is more and more precise measurement. So says Walter Isaacson's book on Albert Einstein. This was, of course, merely 5 years before Einstein's Year of Miracles, where over the course of a few months, Einstein wrote a series of papers that would transform the way we see the universe. One can hardly blame Lord Kelvin for being so wrong. Radical leaps of invention rarely come from insiders. All too often, it's the novices who make bold leaps, simply because they don't know the rules of the game. When a young Dennis Overhauser unveiled the mathematically informed designs of the stealth bomber, which registered a radar signature 1/1000th the size of the next best design ever, as a part of Lockheed Martin's legendary Skunk Works operation, the head of the aerodynamics division supposedly suggested that he be burnt at the stake. I've got a slide rule older than that, kid. They called the stealth bomber the Hopeless Diamond for years. When a representative of Mike Winkleman, aka Beeple's team, reached out to Christie's auction house to explore the radical idea of including a piece of digital art in an auction, it only picked up traction because Megan Doyle, who is a junior cataloger, didn't have high-value clients to keep her from trying something new. After every day sold for a record-breaking $69 million, the experts started to see the light, but it was only because they had a novice on the team. Insight number 5, little data trumps big data. Should I spend my precious time or money on this idea? Every entrepreneur and intrapreneur has asked themselves this question. With surveys being cheaper and easier to create than ever, the draw of big data is almost irresistible. If I can ask 10,000 people what they think, why wouldn't I? We have good reason to advocate against it. When our founders hear us advocate for little data, they do a double take. But here's the thing. Little data, the kind of data that a couple of founders can create through a series of cleverly devised, scrappy experiments, is proprietary data. It's high signal, low cost data that helps founders cross the chasm from conviction to greater conviction. As David Ogilvy once quipped, consumers don't think how they feel, they don't say what they think, and they don't do what they say. So why would you survey, creating big, granted, but highly unreliable data sets? To create little data instead of big data, craft decision moments that reveal actual human behavior rather than hypotheticals. Why bother asking someone what they think when you can observe their behavior instead? Your goal should be to create highly believable moments in as little time and expense as possible. We call this maximizing experimental efficiency. And if there's one focus area for an early stage concept, start with desirability. Certainly, viability and feasibility are important considerations as well, but desirability is the easiest risk to address quickly. Most teams go into prototyping mode asking, "Could we do this?" when really they should be asking, "Should we do this?" Low-resolution, scrappy experiments can provide valuable insight and the confidence needed to move on to the harder-to-answer questions like, "How do we do this?" In conclusion, a lot of the mythology around innovation has been empirically debunked, but that's yet to make its way into the broader consciousness. Creativity and innovation remain shrouded in mystery, and we think that's a shame. Innovation is a learned skill, a developable capability. With effort and attention, every single person is capable of the kinds of 0-to-1 innovations that have previously been attributable only to the chosen few. We hope you enjoy reading this book as much as we enjoyed writing it. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Jeremy. That was 5 Big Ideas from Idea Flow, The Only Business Metric That Matters by Jeremy Utley and Perry Claibon. For more ways to keep your ideas flowing, check out our book bite for How Creativity Rules the World, The Art and Business of Turning Your Ideas into Gold by Maria Brito. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.